Accession number 9168, rule number 22.
Mr. Amat, reel 22.
These youngsters who were in the searchlight site with me previously in December were given the option of voting whether they wanted me to go back with them in charge of the site, or one of the other youngsters who was, they were nearly all grammar school boys in this unit, and that people who've got pretty good jobs in the city and all that, so I was more or less like a fish out of water. So they voted not to have me. I don't think they liked the old regular army discipline that I tried to install into them. Anyway, so I was again back at headquarters as a spare file, as it were, until by the way, this in the winter of 40, that's early on, January and February, was very, very cold and very severe, and had ice and snow. We had quite a job getting stores through to the various searchlight sites. But our CO, who by the way was related to the Robertson's Jam people, his name was Headley, Major Headley, and he was the brother-in-law of one of the Robertson's family who run the jam factory. And nearly all the people, apart from the Gramercy boys I was speaking about, all employees of this factory. And that's why I realised that there was not much chance of me getting anywhere in a unit of this description. Anyway, the major organised, got the workshop people to construct sledges, wooden sledges, and these were towed to places near main roads where vehicles could get through. Then the stores were loaded onto these wooden sledges, and two or three men dragged them across fields to the searchlight site to give them their supplies. And that's one of the things I remember that we did. Then during the spring, we done various little stunts with the sort of manoeuvres they were, in case an enemy invasion. But there was only nobody seems to know very much about that sort of thing. But as I had no rank, I didn't worry too much about it. I didn't take part at all. But in about June of 1940, I was sent to a searchlight site at a place called Stones Green. This was about 3 miles from Clacton-on-Sea in Essex. There, I took over the job as cook. I used to cook the meals for all the boys in the searchlight site, and I also acted as a gunner in case of action. It was a very happy time we spent there, really, as I got to know all the young men there, and we had a lance corporal in charge, and it was very, very cosy little time until one night we heard a lot of rumours, and we saw searchlights on the coast and near Harwich, which was some miles away, a big port, and we heard certain planes going up. One night in June, there was action because some German planes came right overhead, flying low towards London. But so I don't think they, it was only a reconnaissance, but I mean, it's put everybody on their toes, and we all manned the chaps manned the searchlight, and there was a bit of alarm for the time being. But anyway, it went off. But then, I don't know if it was June or July, the Germans started bombing London. And every night we'd hear the planes coming over after the alarm sounded. And then, as I say, we were only 3 miles from the coast, and they used to fly quite high. And it was quite a job to try and fix them with searchlight beams. The idea was pick them up from the coast on a searchlight beam and follow the plane with the beam, and then the other searchlights would pick it up as well and hand it over to searchlights that were based on the route to London so that they could be seen and fired at various points. But I was rather concerned about my wife and family who were up in London and at the time, but of course couldn't do anything about it. But anyway, September, there was a young chap on our site who was he used to live in Walthamstow where we live, and he went home on, we used to get 2 or 3 days leave now and again, and then we got the report back, but nobody yet was allowed to leave the site at any time, only during the day, and only for a few hours. But anyway, he got 3 days leave, and as Eddie had a little car, I asked him if he'd call in at my home, and would he mind bringing my wife and family down for a few days' respite from the bombing. Eventually they came down, and somewhere about the 14th of September, I think it was. Well, I got a place for them to stop for a few days, a house in the village, and on the 15th, that was the following day they came down, that was the day that Hitler was supposed to invade this country, the 15th of September. I was allowed to go out from the site and be with my family during the day, and I know it was a fine sunny day, and we sat on a grass verge near the little village pub, and opposite we could see the Home Guard, which had all been mobilised, manning their sandbag breastworks with all sorts of antique weapons, shotguns and all sorts of things. And well, by the way, while I was doing the cooking and all that sort of thing on this site, I used to go out during the day to go to the village to buy stores for little extras for the lads, for their food. And I had an old cycle I borrowed, and once or twice I went to the cycle to the coast to near Clacton. And after I'd knowing all about the news and all this about the invasion, I made a little survey, and I come to the conclusion that this country was in a sorry state, because on the coast the only defences they had there was near Clacton. The only thing I could see was 2 old 6-pounder naval guns pointing out to sea, manned by a lot of young naval cadets, and God knows how much ammunition they had, but I couldn't see anything visible. And then between them and our site, which was, as I say, 3 miles away, about a mile away from the coast, I come across a platoon of infantry, all youngsters they were mostly, from one of the county regiments, dug in across the road in trenches, and the man in charge was a raw second lieutenant, just come from Sandhurst. And they were only armed with rifles, and as far as I could look, I could see were Lewis guns. So I come to the conclusion that if the Germans had invaded, all they had to do was overcome 2 6-pounder guns and a platoon of infantry, plus the half a dozen rifles and 50 rounds of ammunition we had in our site. But as it happened, it didn't occur, but my instructions were from headquarters that, being as I was anyone who could ride a horse and knew something about finding my way through the country, if the Germans had invaded, I was to catch or commandeer the nearest horse on a farm and ride cross country back to headquarters to warn them that the Germans had invaded, because they assumed that nearly all the communications had been broken down, the telephone wires and all that. That was my job. But anyway, it didn't happen like that. Germany never invaded, and we were spared that terrible thing. Then after in October, I was recalled from the site and went to headquarters, and there I was put onto what was called a CARDI. That was the nucleus of a new unit, and there was one or two officers and a couple of sergeants and other NCOs, and I was one of the other sappers, and we're all posted to Houndsditch Camp in Yeovil. And when we got to Houndsditch Camp, we, I think it was the day before we got there, Jerry had come across and dropped a bomb on Burton's the Tailors, which was next door to Woolworths in the High Street. That was my first acquaintance with this, the town of Yeovil. When I got to Houndsditch Camp, I was posted at the cookhouse of the officers' mess. This was quite a large mess because there was two camps here at the time. There was Houndsditch Camp, which housed the searchlight units, and there was Loughton Camp, which housed the light aircraft, the Beaufort gunners. And by the way, talking about the two camps, is after one of the raids where one of the colonels was killed, both colonels' name was Johnson, which was rather confusing, and it really caused a lot of controversy as well, because one of the colonels was a ex-regular officer and the other one was a territorial, and they ate in the sight of each other, I believe. Well, whilst I was there, we had I used to do help with the cooking in the officers' mess, and I think I'll explain something about this mess because it's rather peculiar. There was 100 dining members here, and they were training establishments. The Houndsditch Camp used to train all the cadres that came in to form new units in the art of searchlights procedure and all that sort of thing. The other one used to train the Beaufort gunners. And what happened was recruits were sent to Houndsditch and Loughton Camp, raw recruits that had just passed out their basic training, foot drills and all that, and had their uniform. And there they were entered into various units, searchlight company units and light aircraft company units. And the cadres, that's the officers, NCOs and men of the who'd already done service, were to sort of take charge of each one of these units, and they would undergo 6 weeks course and then sent back onto, or to really relieve men of other sites. Well, whilst I was there, I was always looking out for a place to bring my wife and family down out of the London bombing. And eventually I found one, but before that, let me explain that these camps were only a short distance away from the coast, and if you went as a crow flies, it was only about 18 to 20 miles from the coast, so we were vulnerable from the very start as regards air raids. There were several raids on the camp whilst I was there. One of the first ones was whilst I was in the cookhouse, I used to get 2 or 3 hours leave to go leave the camp and go down into the town or where I wanted to go. And what I used to do is drop down across the field, drop down a sunken road to a little pub called The Bell, which was the local public house. And I used to like to go there of an evening and have a few drinks and break the monotony and then come back and start again. Well, one night, just after dark, I went down this road and I heard the siren go, the alarm go, and when I heard a plane, a noise of planes coming over, and I saw a couple of German planes in the twilight just over the top of the trees coming towards where I was walking. And then without, almost instantaneously, I saw bombs dropping from their bomb bays and up and down through the branches of the trees. And so I dived down into the nearest ditch and covered myself, my head over with my hand, and waited for the explosions. There were several explosions, but I thought it rather queer that the explosions weren't the usual eye explosives, and I found out afterwards they were what were called oil bombs. What a Jerry had mistaken the avenue of trees where the road was for a camouflage cover for Westland's airfield, where they used to keep what some of the old pre-war planes. Anyway, after the explosion, I got up, shook myself, and I heard someone crying out for help. So I went back to where the noise was coming from, and found there was a chap there who'd been riding a cycle down the road at the time the bombs dropped, and he'd been he was caught just up to his knees with a huge lump of concrete road soil, must have weighed 2 or 3 tons, and that was pushed him right up against the bank, and he couldn't move at all, and he was terrified. Anyway, I tried to pacify him and tried to see if I could get him out, but there was no chance of that. Anyway, 2 or 3 more chaps came down the road after that, and I asked one of them to stay with him and talk to him so as to keep him from being so scared. And the others I took with me down the road, because I knew just down the road was what in the old, those days were called an outside privy, and there was a door there I had seen before as I passed by. It was hanging off its rusty hinges. So anyway, we tore this door off and rushed back and used it as a lever to get this large lump of earth and concrete from off this chap's legs. Then some more chaps came down from the camp, and eventually we got the chap out who'd been pinned up against the bank, and got him into an ambulance and took him back. I don't know how he got on, but I believe he survived all right. Anyway, that was one of the first ones. Another one was in daylight. It came over just a single plane and circled round the camp at some height. You could only a very small speck in the sky this plane was. And anyway, it dived down low, and we saw bombs falling from it onto a tented camp, which was adjourned out into the camp. And I don't know what the casualties were there, anybody was killed or injured, but I never heard about that one. Another night I was in the YMCA, and this was somewhere about 6 or half past, and heard the alarm go, and then we heard a German plane. On looking up in the moonlit sky, we saw this plane circling all round Yeovil and where we were, Amsterdam camp. And then we suddenly heard the swish of the bomb falling, and we all dived onto the floor, and somebody switched the lights out, and then we heard the explosion. A 1,000-pound bomb had dropped on what was called a spider, and that's a section of huts built in such a very much like a spider. Got eight huts coming out at angles like the legs of a spider, and in the centre was all the toilets and ablutions and all that, you see. So it was all and also the boiler for eating the huts. Anyway, this dropped right in the centre there and devastated all these huts, and there was pieces of radiator and wash basins all hundreds of yards away, and quite a devastating. But the three, I think it was only about 4 or 5 men killed, because at this time nearly everybody was either out in the canteen or in the YMCA where I was. Anyway, after that, there were several more alarms while I was still working in the cookhouse, but one afternoon I got leave to go down to the village below where we were, and we I used to have a cycle. I used to ride down this bridge, and I was looking for a billet so that I could bring my wife and family down, as I say before, out of the bombing. And during the time I was down, it was about 4 or 4:30 in the afternoon, and we heard the alarm go, and then I heard German planes. You could always tell German planes because of diesel engines. And saw them circling round in line, very low. Then eventually they turned again and made another run, all in line. And as they came across, I dived for cover in a ditch like one or two of the other civilians who were looking. And the guns, they opened up their guns, the Germans, and fired. Well, it must have been, I found out afterwards, it was Luftenkamp. And as I got over the top of the camp, they rose up and dropped their bombs and then flew off. And there was terrific explosions and fires all over the the camp. Of course, I was about 2.5 miles away, so I never had any trouble. But on making my way back, I was grabbed hold by a sergeant and says, "Hey, you get hold of that and do that and do that." And I was kept all night trying to fight fires and or rescue people from under collapsed buildings. Anyway, next morning I went to report to the cookhouse, and the chap in charge of the cookhouse, by the way, was a civilian, and he asked me where the hell I was the night before. I told him that I'd been grabbed by a sergeant and told to do this and do that, and I wasn't able to come back to the mess. Well, anyway, he seems to go off all right. Anyway, a few days after that, I heard that this chap, he used to live in one of the roads in Yeovil. He used to go home every night. Suspicion had fallen on certain goods are missing from the mess, and the PMC was he's a chap from the Midlands, and he used to always wear a monocle. I remember that. Anyway, he went out there one night as this chap was getting into his car, and asked him to stop and said, "Now, what have you got in your boot of the car?" So he made him open the boot of the car, and there, sure enough, was some large tins of preserved fruit, which the mess had used to buy. They used to, I think, there was about 7 pounds of fruit in each one of these tins, and all some other stuff he was taking away. And so he got sacked on the spot, and so I found this out. And so the same evening, I wrote a letter to the PMC, asked the one of the chaps who was acting as a clerk in the mess to give it to the PMC the following morning. And in it, I made an application for the job as steward, stating that I'd been in charge of officers' messes in the past, and that I knew how to run them, make out a menu, and look after the staff and all that. And I never thought more about it for a couple of days, and then one morning, I was sent for and told to go into the dining room. By the way, this mess was composed of two large buildings. One was a dining room with tables and chairs right the way through the hall, and the other one was called an anteroom, where you had settees and armchairs and all that for and carpets on the floor, where the officers used to retire to for relaxation. And there, well, the other part of the building, connected by a covered walk, was a large corrugated iron cookhouse. And here we had several boilers, the old army type of iron boiler with a fire underneath, and also several huge double-sided ranges. They were called ranges in those days, where a fire was lit in the centre, and the ovens on either side, and all the top was used for various boiling appliances. Anyway, I went into this dining room, and inside there were several officers sitting around a table. One of them was the PMC I recognised as this major. One was the Padre, another one was one of the captains in charge of a company, and another subaltern, I think it was. Anyway, oh, and the messing officer, who was a Captain Elliot, remember his name. And the PMC said that we'd asked you to come here because we've been looking at your letter of application, and we'd like to ask you a few questions. So they asked me a few questions, and one of them was, why was it that you, with all your experience, was still only a sapper? So I said, that question is best answered by my OCs, not me. And there was quite a giggle about that, because it was more or less a slant. Anyway, after a bit, the PMC says, all right, wait outside. And I went outside and waited for a few minutes, and then eventually they called me in and said, we've decided to give you the job as steward of the officer's mess, and you will be promoted sergeant instantly. And you'll be in charge of all the staff, and we want you to make out the menu and run the whole thing, and you'll have carte blanche for anything you want. A car will be put at your disposal every day, and we expect you to, well, we hope you'll be able to do the job we want. By the way, you'll also get a small bonus every month. We're going to allot you £4 from the funds for your services. Well, this was rather bolt out the blue, but anyway, it was quite a big job, really, because I had 100 dining members to look after. I had to make out the menu, go down with some of the cooks, or men from the cookhouse, and draw the rations, or see that they were drawn, and check their weight and all that. Now also I had to go to town and buy extra things for the officer's mess, apart from the rations, so that he could get an adequate diet.